When Colder Farrow had first ridden into Cheyenne country, he'd given the little supplied town of Crow Dance a wide berth. He'd known it to be a buffalo skinner's camp, as well as a trading post and a meeting ground for men who sold contraband rifles and whiskey to the Sioux while staying several steps ahead of the army, who were almost constantly hunting the Indians themselves. The only reason he was heading there now was to inform the constable of the stolen gold. Cimarron had sent Colter because he needed his more experienced hands at the ranch. At least, that's what Cimarron had told Colter early that morning, when the rancher had sent the young drover off on the blaze-faced Coyote Dunn with a grub sack of Miss Pearl's bacon biscuits and some chicken sandwiches hanging from his saddle horn. Colter suspected the real reason he'd been sent, however, was that Cimarron trusted neither Griff Shanley nor Stretch Dawson not to linger in the camp, maybe get caught up in the trap of whiskey and whores that Crow Dance was known for. Colter didn't like the assignment for obvious reasons, the main one being that he had a price on his head. But it was doubtful anyone this far north of Sapanero would have heard of the bounty. Besides, he didn't intend to stay any longer than it took to inform the constable of the gold, turn northwest around, and head straight back the way he'd come, returning to the Diamond Bar in the late afternoon. Crow Dance wasn't much over a block long, but all the tents and cabins and a few bona fide buildings were all wedged together as though for protection against the high country weather. Most of the tents were saloons, he saw, with bushy-headed men in buckskins standing around in the open doorways holding soapy beer mugs in their fists. Most bore the bloodstains of buffalo skinners, though others wore the stamp of prospectors and local businessmen. Those better armed were likely in the business of selling rifles or hooch or possibly slave women to the Indians. As he rode through the sloppy street, he looked for a shingle announcing the constable's office and was distracted when, midway through town, he saw a genuine wooden structure, two stories high and with a balcony with a scrolled railing wrapped around its second story. The balcony was teeming with girls dressed skimpily in every color of the rainbow, and some in black as they leaned over the rail to give passers-by on the street a good look down their camisoles or negligees billowing out from their chests. One of the girls leaning against the second-story wall smiled down at Colter and stepped out to the balcony, swinging her hips coquettishly. Unlike most of the other girls, she was a real beauty with brown eyes and brown hair gathered in a French braid with a bone comb in it. And she was wearing more than just underwear, a puffy-sleeved black and red dress with a plunging neckline and several necklaces. Long, bejeweled rings dangled from her ears.
Hello there, stranger. Take care to light and see the spell?
Colter stopped northwest in front of the balcony and stared up at the girl. He had to admit to a warm flush in his cheeks and a tug down in his lower regions. A tumble might do him some good. But that wasn't why he was here.
Ma'am, I was wondering if you could tell me where I'd find the constable, George Nolan?
The girl's smile suddenly faded. She turned her head slightly, looking down at Colter's left cheek, and her dark brows wrinkled with something akin to both sympathy and revulsion.
Don't mind the mark, miss. That there's a birthmark.
He broadened his smile, trying to put the girl at ease, trying to put himself at ease also. The girl straightened her head and her smile returned, though the nettling sympathy did not leave her eyes.
On up the street, on this side of the Chinaman's laundry tent, you'll see the shingle. Wanna come up first? Take the stiffness out of your bones? I have a birthmark too, and I'd be happy to show you.
I do appreciate that, miss. Maybe when I'm in town again. I'm afraid this visit's purely a business trip.
Ask for Destelle.
Colter gigged northwest ahead, continuing to gaze up at the delectable beauty staring down at him.
Destelle. Damn, I like that. What country you from?
I'm from France. What's your handle, cowboy?
Colter. Colter Farrell.
Damn, I like that.
Once Colter had ridden on past the building, he glanced back over his shoulder at her, and she lifted her arm high above her head, smiling brightly and waving. The vision of the pretty girl atop the saloon balcony lingered with Colter until he saw the sign nailed to a post on the right side of the street and fronting a square-shaped tent with both flaps tied back. On the sign was burned Crow Dance Constable George Nolan. There was a single hitch rack fronting the tent, and a tabby cat was sitting on the stock trough, flanking the hitch rack, lapping the muddy water. As Coulter put Northwest up to the hitch rack, the cat jumped down and ran into the constable's tent.
Hey, you scared my cat.
Coulter dismounted and tossed Northwest's reins over the hitch rack. Hitching his Remington high on his right hip, where he had it positioned for the cross draw, Coulter peered through the open tent flaps. Inside the tent was a roll-top desk and a small sheet-iron stove and not much else. A gun belt and a pair of muddy spurs hung from the tent's center post. One man sat behind the desk, holding the tabby cat on his shoulder. Another man sat behind the first man, laying out a game of solitaire on an apple crate. He had a shotgun across his knees and a bottle and a glass on the crate. He was a big gent with a broad, pugnacious face under a floppy-brimmed canvas hat. The man behind the desk stared hard at Coulter. He was younger than the man flanking him and wore a copper eagle and flag badge on his coat lapel. He appeared tall, though he was sitting down, and was impeccably dressed in a black suit complete with black foulard ties snugged against a white paper collar. The man's dark eyes owned a cold, arrogant cast. He stroked the back of the cat, who was now facing away from Coulter on the man's lap, with a long, pale hand on which he wore a gold pinky ring.
Sorry about your cat.
Watch your boots. I just cleaned this floor.
Coulter glanced at the wooden floor, clean except for the faint mud tracks the cat had made. He looked at the young man, who obviously enjoyed being the constable of Crow Dance.
You, Mr. Nolan?
Constable Nolan, yes.
Constable Nolan. I work for Cimarron Padilla, out to the Diamond Bar Ranch on Diamond Creek. Cimarron sent me into town to inform you of a little problem we have.
Cimarron, huh?
The man behind him had stopped playing solitaire and turned toward Coulter with mute interest. A badge was pinned to the lapel of his shabby brown coat, which he wore over a soiled linsey-woolsey tunic. Coulter looked behind him, making sure no one else was within hearing, then stepped farther into the tent. He glanced at the man flanking Nolan, who looked every bit as hard and unscrupulous as the other men Coulter had seen in the town so far. Coulter wondered how well he could keep a gold secret. After his experience in Sapinero, the young puncher didn't trust lawmen as far as he could throw them into a stiff wind.
So, what's the problem?
The cat leaped down off his lap and disappeared somewhere behind him. Coulter hesitated, switching his gaze between the constable and his hard-nosed deputy, who stared at Coulter with a faint mocking in his hazel gaze under shaggy red-blonde brows. Cimarron must have trusted Nolan, however, so Coulter told the two men about the gold. He glazed over the fact of his killing the three who'd been carrying the loot toward the rendezvous with their amigos.
How much is there?
$26,000.
Cimarron ain't gonna keep it for himself.
Well, he figured you'd summon the sheriff over to Buffaloville and he'd come out and fetch it. Cimarron said he'd only turn the money over to the sheriff, Bill Wilden. Cimarron will keep the gold safe till Wilden rides out for it.
Well, don't that beat all? An honest mix.
He just don't want no trouble with the law. Old Cimarron probably had his fill of it down in Texas.
Well, I reckon that's it.
Coulter pinched his hat brim and started back out the open tent flaps.
Hey, kid. What the hell's your name anyways?
It was the one question Coulter had hoped to avoid. His mind raced. Should he give these men an alias? But he'd already mentioned his name to the pretty whore. Giving an alias now might only draw more unwanted attention to himself.
Name's Coulter Farrell, sir.
Where are you from?
New Mexico.
Coulter tried an affable grin, and then he nodded cordially and walked on out of the tent.
New Mexico, huh?